Hey, I'm Del Shores.
And I'm Emerson Collins, and you're watching The Del and Emerson Show.
Straight talk.
Real gay! Hi, Del Shores.
Hi, Emerson Collins. I came in really late. I was just like right under the wire, and I didn't really take a good look at you, but you look so tan. Tell me about that. What happened?
Well, one, it's really because this, obviously, the setup is different, and I couldn't figure out how to make it not orange. So here we are. But also,
I didn't want to say orange. I just didn't want to go there.
It's fine. I think of it as more Snooki than Trump, so I'm okay with it. It's a little Oompa Loompa. You know, he does not have
Southern Baptist sissies after before we color corrected.
No, that was green. That was like Alphaba. Yes. Hello, everybody, and welcome, whether you're watching us on YouTube or Facebook. Thank you for being here with us. Please feel free to share the broadcast with your friends. Send us some comments if you have questions, things you want us to talk about. The world is busy and full, and we are continuing our theme of pride and protests in support of the Black Lives Matter movement and our queer Black family members. So we're going to focus on some of those stories and some wider stories and get back to sharing the queer news.
And you were there. You were in the hub of it. You went a marching, didn't you?
I did. You know, I've been in Palm Springs for the quarantine. And on Saturday morning, there was a protest action in Palm Springs in the big park there. And I was genuinely excited to be able to go out and support and be physically present. We made signs and went, and it was organized by four or five 16 to 17 year old high school girls, all women of color and Black girls. And I was so impressed. It was so exciting to see really young people taking the lead. They're young justice advocates, if you want to find them on Twitter or Instagram. They planned the program. At the end, they did a long series of thank yous to where they got the podium from, the speaker system from, who provided the water. They had a table registering young people to vote, which I thought was smart and impressive as a part of the action. So it was really thrilling to be there in the community and be physically present. There hasn't been as much action in Palm Springs as there has been other places. So I was thrilled to go and stand up and support.
And it was hot there, right? So it was like, you had
not for Palm Springs. It was like 85, 87.
Oh, that's nothing. That's nothing.
Yeah. You know, a little bit of sweat and sacrifice for the cause is not too much to ask. But we made our signs.
It could get. I said, we know it could get like last year. I don't know if you remember this, but I had been away so much, which I miss so much. I'll never complain about being on the road again, ever. But I was away and I thought, I got to go check on my place in Palm Springs. I haven't been down there. So I didn't even think. And I just loaded up the chihuahuas and the little bitches. When you say Palm Springs, you know how they're very excited. When I arrived in Palm Springs, I looked at my car and it said outside temperature 120 degrees. That's before I walked out. I opened that door and those dogs looked at me with the biggest fuck you look I've ever seen in my life. They were like, why are we here? So I think that was August though. So
yeah. So, but the weather cooperated and it was a wide range of community. You know, there was a lot of young people there. From the other desert cities as well. A smattering of the white gays that you would expect to see in Palm Springs. I will say, we even talked about, we're a little disappointed knowing how strong and present the sort of older white gay community is in Palm Springs, that the numbers in that category wasn't larger. Now, we know you can't assume someone's sexuality, but also you can. And it's important, you know, in the conversations we're having that we continue to show up, whether this affects you personally or not.
Yeah, I feel like that. I think that some of that is actually COVID related. I feel like I would be much more ready to go out if I weren't 62 years old and petrified of COVID, you know.
I will say everyone was in masks as far as the eye could see. So people are doing their best to be responsible while also participating in these actions.
Well, good for you, Emerson. I loved your sign on Instagram. Can you tell them what it was? You don't have it, do you? You didn't put it.
No, I don't have it sitting with me. And yes, obviously, older people being responsible is important, but it is still feeds to the conversation of us remembering to support things that don't directly affect us. But yes, my sign, on one side it said Black Trans Lives Matter. And then on the other side it said white people. We're like the white characters in Dreamgirls. It's important that we be here, but it's not our story or our show.
Well said. And
well, you know, they say, you know, as we talk about all of this, it's, they say, talk to your people, talk to your community. And white homosexuals that love musical theater is my community. So it seemed like an appropriate analogy for the situation.
And, you know, you've played one of those white, as we pointed out.
And I did get to play one of those white gay, white whites in the Dreamgirls.
Yeah, that's right. So,
All right. Well, we've got a bunch of stories. We want to keep our focus on the fact that Pride was a protest. It is Pride Month. It's Protest Month. Staying active and involved in these situations, even as we continue forward with legislation. So we got some stories for that as well.
And a great guest. We have David Reddish from Queerty is here with us today. And I had an interview with him and I called Emerson immediately. I said, oh my God, I had an interview with somebody that asked me questions that I really enjoyed answering. He's so smart. Can we have him on the show? And Emerson said, yes. You know, because Emerson's in charge of everything. I have to clear it all. He is the executive producer. I am just like the lowly
lead talent.
Just talent. I just read. I basically just come here and read.
So in our first protest story, Tifin Sofa is a non-binary activist who attended a Sacramento protest last weekend. And when police opened fire at the crowd with rubber bullets and tear gas, they said, I was supporting my comrades and friends who were leading, passing out water and snacks, and I was only on the scene for 5 minutes, and then this happened. I was hit in the face 3 times with a tear gas canister and 2 rubber bullets. I mean, I'm very lucky to be alive. They suffered from a fractured skull and will have to undergo at least 2 surgeries. Lenz Williams, another activist that was there, said that police also shot at innocent bystanders standing on the sidewalk thinking that they were safe. You know, one, this is a story of our community continuing to show up to support, but it's another in a long list of videos and actions of where we can see across the country police departments responding with an overuse of force that feeds directly into the narrative that Black people are talking about in their experiences with police departments.
All right. Well, and in Chicago, there's an Instagram video from a May 30th demonstration that shows the Chicago cop calling a protester a fucking faggot after a traffic cone and barricade were thrown in his direction as he had his back to the protesters. But the person who posted the video wrote that the officer also attacked Chase, a protester, with the stop sign he is dragging before the cone flew, and that other cops were watching him and doing absolutely nothing. Chicago Civilian Office of Police Accountability issued a statement on Friday calling Police Superintendent David Brown to investigate the incident and to identify and suspend the officer in the video, and the police department followed with a statement Saturday morning saying any derogatory comment is inexcusable and has no place in the department. The department has opened an investigation. And lesbian Mayor Lori Lightfoot, who I love, has denounced the use of homophobic language as well. She called for other instances of the policeman misconduct during the protest, saying officers who used obscene gestures against protesters and hid their badges should be fired. And she is absolutely right. And there's a lot of this. I mean, I was watching the news today, Emerson. I mean, look at what's going on in Austin right now. It's like it's just erupting. It's erupting, and people are just saying no more. It's like we're done. We're done.
Yeah, and you know, it's these things go together, right? Like that's a story about a police officer using a slur for gay people. We're talking about how Black people's interactions are with the police, and it's even more so for people that live at that intersection, Black queer people and Black trans people, and that leads to, you know, the next piece of the story following up. We talked last week about the missteps that Christopher Street West made in announcing a LA Pride March in solidarity with Black people. Well, then it came out that they were requesting a permit from the police department, and there was a lot of objection to that and to not having consulted with Black organizations or Black leaders in advance of making that announcement. You can't be in solidarity with people you haven't talked to. And that's really important for us that are white people in the queer community, you know, as we talk about the wider culture, but also how we deal with it within our own community. If you work in activism, if your organization is about the community, it's sort of inexcusable that it didn't occur to this to you first. This isn't somebody's aunt on Facebook. This is an organization that deals with our community. So they announced on Monday that they would no longer helm the demonstration on June the 14th. The new march is named All Black Lives Matter March, and it's in the hands of an advisory board of Black LGBTQ plus leaders. The march will still take place and will proceed from Hollywood to West Hollywood. And Christopher Street West assured its followers that there would be no police presence or corporate sponsors. They said, this is not a pride parade or celebration event. This is a solidarity protest march, and asked participants to wear masks to help prevent the spread of COVID-19. The statement did also include an apology to Black Lives Matter organizers and acknowledged that systemic racism, implicit bias, and privilege exists in their organization as well as the United States, and committed to examining their internal policy and further diversify its board to include more voices and perspectives from the Black LGBTQ plus community. I really like this response. I think this is really good. The march is still happening. It's being led by members of our community, as it should be, since that is who it's for, including Blossom. You remember the Black trans woman at the Pride Town Hall, you know, at the Town Hall, who said Black trans lives matters? She's on that advisory board. So taking our protest leaders and putting them in positions of power as it relates to their protests, that's really good. I think that's great that Christopher Street West has resolved this to the satisfaction of Black queer people in our community.
Well, and you were the first one who pointed it out to me when they announced it. It was like, you were like, I don't know what they're thinking. I mean, what are they thinking?
And I mean, it was my reaction, but also I saw several other people find the police permits. And look, you know, this speaks to a thing that you see sort of happening as people get called out, right? Or called in, if it's like within our own community. I've made mistakes in my life. I've said racist things or transphobic things at some point, or wasn't aware of the impact of the things that I've said, or had microaggressions against people of color I know and love, or trans people. You know, we have to be able to sit back when we are criticized or called out and hear the other person's perspective, you know, to understand why they are perceiving it that way. Like, you know, the impulse is to say, well, that's not what I meant. Well, that's great, but intentions don't matter, impact matters. And remembering that at the end of it, we still get to be white and there's still Black in America. They can't put that down, you know? And when we screw up, leaning into understanding why it was hurtful or why it was impactful on other people, rather than worrying so much about the defense and the explanation. It's gonna happen. And the people that you love, hopefully the people you love now feel freer to hold you accountable, you know, to tell you things, and we can have these conversations. And it's happening every day.
Also, I think it's retraining your mind sometimes. I really do. I think, like, you think about that, and this is the way we do things, is we're sitting around a table. Oh my God, we have to support them. We have to support them. Oh, but we didn't think to ask them if they wanted to be involved in this. And it's the same thing as we hear things and we see things and we sometimes just say nothing. I mean, I feel like that's one of the things that I've been most guilty of, is just saying nothing, just or saying something to you, Emerson, or to, you know, or to my ex-wife, Kelly, who one thing that we get along great at is politics, is, you know, but then we forget, you know, no. You have to say something. You have to say something, or you have to think and figure it out and listen. Yeah. You know, I love thinking and listening, you know.
And it would be, because so many of us, I'm sure there are some people who have been perfect. I have not. But also, don't let mistakes you've made inhibit you from growing and showing up. You know, there are people that this particular murder of a Black man is the thing that changed for them. For some people, it was Eric Garner. For some people, it was, wasn't doing a lot until Mike Brown and Ferguson in 2014. Before that, I've lived all over the world and had friends of all different races, but I don't know that I was actively thinking about it.
Right.
But once you show up, keep showing up, you know, do the work, get involved, continue the actions. And if somebody holds up something from your past, say you're right. That was bad and I'm doing better, and show your work. You know, don't let the fear of criticism keep you from participating either.
Well, I want to ask a question, and I'm going to go a little off topic for a second. What do you think about dredging up things from people's past? That's happening a lot right now. Where, you know, I mean, we saw 4 cast members get fired off of Vanderpump Rules today for things that were pretty far away from today.
What do you think?
I think it's needed. I think it's similar. It reminds me of the Me Too movement, and I think we need. I think we go, okay, did it take this for us to think that what they did and what they said and was worthy of a firing? It didn't at the time, but now it does. I think, yeah, I'm all for it.
Great.
I felt like that in that we need to be held accountable. And I think it needs to, there needs to be, like, even with that show, which I'm a fan of. I mean, it's a guilty pleasure of mine. But I never thought about this, but then I started thinking, we're the gay people. We're the black people on this show, except for a villain or two, you know?
Uh-huh. I mean, I don't know what specifically you're talking about, but I think also people that have demonstrated growth, you know, I do think there are case-by-case basises for dealing with people's history, you know, because there's a very big black trans activist that was a surrogate for Elizabeth Warren, who years in her past had really bad things, but you can also see the action she has done since then. So I think lots of things go into that, into a specific instance for consideration.
Hey, will you do me a favor? Will you put yourself on the screen for this next story so I can plug into the Ethernet? I forgot to. Just feature yourself for a second.
Your story.
Oh, it isn't. I thought, no, it isn't, is it? Oh, yes, it is my story. Okay, I'll do this story then without, I don't know if I'm clear or not. I get paranoid now. Oh, this is about Joe Biden, who we saw all today on, if you watched any of the funeral, he was a big presence there as well. So Joe Biden has now announced a new voter outreach effort aimed at the LGBTQ community called Out for Biden. There are 11 million LGBTQ Americans eligible to vote in the upcoming presidential election. Okay, get this. 2 million are not registered to vote. And about 50% of the LGBTQ people, this was shocking to me, are registered voters, Democrats. Reggie Greer, LGBTQ plus vote director, said, our campaign's decision to launch Out for Biden in the shadow of historic protests elevates the power of the movement, the moment, and encourages deep and sometimes difficult dialogue within our LGBTQ community as Pride Month begins. LGBTQ people, plus people of color, are central to the fabric of our communities. We must elect a government that will center their voices and celebrate the contributions of LGBTQ people everywhere. The effort could prove crucial in swing states like Florida and Pennsylvania, where the campaign desperately needs to win. So I was, you know, we were having a mini conversation before this, before we started, and I was telling you how shocked I was when I read this story that only 50% of LGBTQ voters were registered as Democrats. And you said,
I'm not registered as a Democrat because in California, it doesn't matter. Like, you can vote in a Democratic primary without being a Democrat. And I don't want to be on all those people's mailing lists.
So that's the reason.
Because they troll the like part, you know, and then all those emails y'all get all the time, I don't get those because I'm not on that master list.
I had to unsubscribe to a lot because you do go on every single candidate's mailing list. And it gets to be a lot. It does. But I am I want you to know, I am a registered Democrat. I am a yellow dog Democrat, and I will all.
Well, I'm a voting Democrat, and that's the only time it matters.
Okay. Yes, you're right.
And also I think there's lots of independents or Green Party, you know, that certainly LGBTQ people fall under different groups. I want to derail for a second and address this question that Stephen asked.
Okay.
So Stephen said, am I racist if I don't hook up with blacks? So let's talk about this for a minute, because years ago I wrote a blog sort of musing on like, what does it mean if you think you're not attracted to a group of people? And so, Stephen, I would answer it this way. One, some of our attraction is based on our life experience and the people we encounter, right? Some of it's based on what the media presents to us as the ideal beauty standards. In our community, it's often white gays with eight packs. And then I would challenge you to consider this. If you think I don't date Black people or Asian people or Latino people, the enormous amount of diversity that exists just under the umbrella of Black people, I think is probably as wide as the distance between white people and Black people. So I do think if you have the thought, I don't date Black people, that's based in racism from a combination of things. If you have not dated Black people, whatever. But if you go to the conscious thought of I don't date an entire ethnicity, an entire race of people, as a conscious thought, as opposed to a thing that has happened, and there's still unexamined bias, that yes, that is based in racism. Is my answer to that.
And my question, Stephen? Was that his name, Stephen?
Uh-huh.
I don't know you, but I ask you, are you a racist? Because of this? No, basic question is, are you a racist? Look in your heart, look in your soul, look in your mind. Are you a racist? You know the answer to that.
So, but the kind of conversations it's important for us to have and for us as white people to engage in so that it's not Black people always having to be the ones to sit in that kind of debate. So I hope you stick around, Stephen, but that is my thought. All right, now on to a really big thing that exploded the other day. J.K. Rowling, if you have not seen, got into a lot of trouble again for a series of transphobic tweets that were certainly perceived that way by the trans community. Now, if you just saw a piece of it later, it's important to understand the instigation. She tweeted a news story that was about creating a more equal post-COVID-19 world for people who menstruate. It was about investing in menstrual health and hygiene because an estimated 1.8 billion people menstruate, and this has not stopped because of the pandemic. They still require materials, safe access to toilets, soap, water, and private spaces, even under the lockdown conditions. Now, it seemed her objection was that they said people who menstruate, because the caption of her tweet was, someone help me out. Wimbin? Wimpund? Woomud? I'm sure there used to be a word for those people who menstruate. So I hope that makes sense. It was a story about people who menstruate and meeting the health needs that go with that. And her objection was that they didn't say women. So after that, she went on to say, if sex isn't real, there's no same-sex attraction. If sex isn't real, the lived reality of women globally is erased. I know and love trans people, but erasing the concept of sex removes the ability of many to meaningfully discuss their lives. It isn't hate to speak truth. The idea that women like me who've been empathetic to trans people for decades, feeling kinship because they're vulnerable in the same way as women, i.e. to male violence, hate trans people because they think sex is real and has lived consequences, is a nonsense. I respect every trans person's right to live any way that feels authentic and comfortable to them. I'd march with you if you were discriminated against on the basis of being trans. At the same time, my life has been shaped by being female. I do not believe it's hateful to say so. Now, first and foremost, the idea that she had to say the word if people are being discriminated against on the basis of being trans is bonkers. And I hope that that made it clear, right? Because there are some people I think who hear, oh, I sort of agree with that. But her point was an article that was talking about people who menstruate said people who menstruate as a wider umbrella to include trans people who do, who identify as non-binary, or men who menstruate because they are trans. And her objection was that they didn't just say women and use that as the jumping off point. So now rightfully, trans people exploded at her and the community did, and it was really hurtful to a lot of trans people, obviously, who are fans of her work. And she's a really, really big figure, obviously, in the literary world. So to see someone like that have such a close-minded perspective on how she wants to define women to be able to speak about her personal experience, certainly was hurtful to a lot of trans people based on the response. Do you have a thought or I'll just go? Keep going.
No, I just think you should just shut the fuck up and stop. I mean,
well, and the problem is, and I didn't think to write it down, but I watched a woman talk about, she said, you know, J.K. Rowling's talking about women's ability to talk about their experience as women, right? But an affluent white woman and a poor black woman have very different experiences of being a cis woman, just in the same way that trans women have a different experience of dealing with their bodies and being trans women. You know, there's an enormous cornucopia of experiences as women. So it seems she wants to define it in a very small, specific way that only excludes trans women, not acknowledging the great diversity of other kinds of women and their experiences and how they relate to it. And then, so yesterday, Daniel Radcliffe put out a statement with the Trevor Project. Obviously, he played Harry Potter, unless you've been living under a rock. And he said in part, Joe is unquestionably responsible for the course my life has taken as someone who has been honored to work with and continues to contribute to the Trevor Project for the last decade. And just as a human being, I feel compelled to say something at this moment. Transgender women are women. Any statement to the contrary erases the identity and dignity of trans people and goes against all advice given by professional healthcare associations who have far more expertise on the subject matter than either Joe or I. According to the Trevor Project, 78% of trans and non-binary youth report being the subject of discrimination due to their gender identity. It's clear we need to do more to support them, not invalidate their identities and not cause further harm. The Trevor Project has a guide to being an ally to trans and non-binary youth as well. So that's how you show up as an ally. You know, when we talk about how are we being allies to Black people, this is someone that's just as important as her in that particular universe, and him standing up and saying as an ally with the Trevor Project, I need to speak. I want to speak on this as well. That, to me, that's not speaking over people. That's, hey, she's from the Harry Potter world. He's literally fucking Harry Potter and saying, I don't agree with this. This is bad. This is the work, and why it's important is about these youth. So I thought that was really excellent example of how we can all be allies.
Absolutely. Great response. So do we have time? We've cut this story through.
Yes, no, do it. Do the story. And, you know, there's a lot going on, and we want to focus on the important things, but we want to keep you entertained, and this next one is absurd to stay in that vein.
Very funny. So July of last year, an Australian used Facebook to hire two men for more than $3,000 to break into his house for a role play. He wanted to be stripped to his underwear, tied up, and stroked with a broom. Okay. But then he moved and didn't tell them his new address. So the men showed up at the old address and broke in. The man now living there, woke up, removed the sleep apnea mask he was wearing to find two men carrying machetes. And the machetes were props they brought along as their role play. The role play performers asked the resident to confirm his name. Quickly realizing their mistake, they left, and then the residents called the cops. The actual client then called the men to find out where they were, and the men with their driver went to the correct address, where the man who hired them asked them to leave the machetes in the car. Apparently, they didn't really need to bring those. The police showed up and found the machetes in the vehicle. The client had cooked breakfast at this point for his guests. That seems like a slow response from the police. And one of them had fallen asleep on the couch. A lawyer for one of the men argued in court the use of the machetes was not intended to intimidate. It was a commercial agreement to tie up and stroke a semi-naked man in his underpants with a broom. It was not intended to intimidate. It was not. District Court Judge Sean Grant agreed, saying they carried the machetes either as a prop or something to use in this fantasy. The fantasy was unscripted, and there was discretion as to how it would be carried out. The judge also conceded the facts of this case are unusual. No shit.
I just love it so much. Like the insanity of like, you paid two people to come like do a fantasy and then you moved and forgot to tell them. Like,
and then where are you?
That poor man with the apnea. You know, what, like, can you imagine the journey that he's on? I mean, bless his heart.
PTSD for the rest of his life that involves machetes.
Like maybe, you know, Mark said in a strange turn of events, oh, not that one, this one. In a strange turn of events, he no longer suffers from sleep apnea. Yeah, I mean, can you imagine? I don't know that I'd ever be able to go to sleep again. I'd have to move.
That's
and everybody's moved. Also, I just love the, what's your name? Which I appreciate the consent and the safety involved in the situation. They didn't just start out the role play.
Yeah.
Lord.
I have to say, I guess I'm just vanilla. I've just never, ever, ever even thought about anything like that.
I mean, you know, it takes
the broom. Can we talk about the broom?
Also, I love that, like, we might need the machetes. Oh, we don't need the machetes. Okay, great.
I go to splinters immediately with that broom. There are splinters involved.
Also, a commercial, because Rio, we don't have jobs and we don't know when we can work again. If you're enjoying the show and you want to contribute, you can always tip on Venmo at Emerson Collins and on PayPal to Beard Collins Shores Productions at gmail.com. No obligation, but we're obviously out of work entertainers doing our best to give you a good time. But our special guest has just arrived, waiting in the wings in our green room. And so let's just bring him on in and chat. We're having such a grand old time today. So he is a journalist that we know from Queerty, but he is also an author with 3 books published, Sex, Drugs, and Superheroes, and its sequel, Conquest of the Planet of the Geeks. And then he has his Lambda Literary Award nominated, The Passion of Sergius and Bacchus. So an all-around talented writer. Please welcome to our show, David Reddish.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
David,
how are you today, David?
It's a crazy day, but that's sort of par for the course in my life. So
I mean, it feels like it's universal at the moment.
Is there stars behind you?
Yeah, well, I thought it was a lot more interesting than a popcorn ceiling.
It's fantastic. I was saying, just by the titles of your books, I speak it already. So, but I mean, I was like, okay. I think I might want to read that first one.
Yeah, please, by all means.
I had such a good time with you the other day, so thank you for that, and thank you for plugging our event. We did very well with it, by the way. We haven't given an update, so I'll tell you, we raised over $50,000 for these theaters, and another probably in 25 more with our Prizio and with our auctions. So we're going to be able to give each theater at least somewhere between $3,000, something like that. So we're really excited. And you helped us because you drove so many people. We had, how many people saw it, Emerson?
2,300.
Wow.
Live viewers.
So wow. I'm just doing my job, guys. It's all you. So congratulations.
But this is part of why, you know, I was excited to have you on. You know, working in the world of being a writer in queer content and working in queer media, the world that you work in, one, it seemed so many revolutions in the last 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, and it's a really hard space to inhabit. And what I enjoy so much about your work is you often write about things and projects other people aren't. And that's a lot of work for you to find, you know, you clearly seek out stories, you know, rather than aggregating, oh, everybody wrote about this story today, here's my version of that for our site. And that's a lot of legwork for you, isn't it?
I mean, it's my job, right? One thing, when I took over as entertainment editor at Queerty, one thing I really had in mind was that I wanted us to be a leader in our entertainment coverage and not be reactionary to everybody else or what the rest of the entertainment world sort of already knew. I wanted to be on the front lines with the trades, with Hollywood Reporter, with Variety, with Entertainment Weekly, whoever else. So I'm really proud to say that we've kept up pretty well, especially given, you know, some of the resources that I've had or not had over the years, but it's a thrill. So it's an honor to hold the job and to keep it up. So.
Well, you were telling me when we were talking that you had, because of the pandemic, you had a lot of your employees were furloughed, right? And so you're like working double and triple hard.
I am. So we were forced to put a lot of our freelancers on furlough because of the COVID pandemic and that affecting our budget and our coverage and everything else, like everybody else, right? So yes, I've had to do additional stories. For the most part, it's just been a lot of work. It's not a terrible thing by any stretch. And it's also allowed me the chance to do a column that I've always wanted to do, which is a sort of daily film, the daily dose, the thing you're going to watch today. to pay homage to your queer elders and to celebrate life and celebrate the world. So writing those has been really enjoyable, actually.
Well, and it's really impressive, you know, because as we look at, like, where do we learn queer culture, right? You know, how do you, where do people find out? We found, even I found, in producing a very sorted wedding, you know, younger digital queer editors who didn't know anything about sorted lives, where when it came out when they were in, you know, middle school or high school, was so important in our culture, and pitching them a story about a thing they've never heard of. It is things like what you're doing that helps our younger audiences remember the pieces that led to the things they love now. So it's such an important connective tissue.
Well, you guys flatter me, but like I say, it's an honor. It's truly, truly an honor to be that guy. So
it's amazing, person, by the way, that now that a 65-year-old man is pointing to the Sorted franchise because of his Instagram. I mean, it's like, right. I can't tell you how many people come to me on Instagram now and go, oh my God, I love Leslie Jordan. I mean, yes, it's 20 years old. Something just fell.
I hope he missed. What the hell was that?
That one of the dogs?
No.
He has three children.
I always get so worried when someone's picture falls over, because it happened. It's a whole other story.
Okay.
But someone's picture just fell over.
Okay.
Now, David, what was your entry point? Did you start from journalism, or did you start as like, I'm a writer, and then journalism is the great day job to have a consistent life? What was your...
The short answer is I got really, 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 really lucky. So originally I went to film school and I studied screen theory, you know, semiotics and cinema studies and film criticism, thinking I'm going to go make a living being a film critic, without stopping to consider that maybe there are two people on the planet that actually make a decent living doing that.
Right.
So I also had, you know, ambitions to be a screenwriter. I developed a very close friendship with my screenwriting professor, Barry Sandler, who's also a member of the community, wrote a movie called Making Love that you may have seen.
Oh, love Making Love.
Yeah. So he really encouraged me to be a screenwriter. I came out here, was out here a few years. The big writer strike in 08 happened. So that sort of derailed all my screenplays from getting made. So I said, well, hell, I'll just try writing a book. And so I did. I went home and I'd had an idea kicking around that I couldn't get down on a script. So I said, I'll make it into a book, and it worked as a novel. And so that then went out, and one novel led to two, led to three, and got me some notice. And when Sergiu Simbakas was nominated for the Lambda Literary Prize, that's when people finally started hiring me professionally. So to write full time, which was great.
That's amazing.
Are you pursuing screenwriting anymore? Is it still going on?
I mean, I would love to. There have been talks over the years about adapting one of my novels, and I'd love to take a crack at writing the script to them. You know, and I'd love to just be writing more fiction right now as it is, but the state of my life is such that I don't have the time and energy to do it. Yeah. This is a full-time job that I have now, and it takes so much time and energy and focus to just stay on top of everything. So. So I will get there eventually. I'll take a vacation in a year or two. We'll see.
And the first two are set in the like geek Comic-Con world, correct?
Yes, they are. The first ever book written about Comic-Con.
That's amazing, by the way. What a fantastic like trivia bit for that to be the case.
Well, I mean, it gets attention. You know, some people don't know what to expect with it, but to me, it's more about the idea of the culture and the way these people think and the way they feel and the way creativity relates to their own lives. And some of that's autobiographical and some of that's based on people that I know that I've met at Comic-Con. This would have been, I guess, my 17th year going, but it's been canceled due to the pandemic, so.
Did you get in trouble like I do with my relatives, with anybody that you fictionalize?
Funny story.
Yes, please.
There is somebody that has not spoken to me after it came out. He didn't want to speak with me again. His complaints were kind of silly. He essentially said I based one character on him, which wasn't true. And you know, it's a work of fiction. That's it. So right. I think there were other things going on in his life, and that maybe was part of the reaction, but. At a certain point, and I'm sure you guys know what this is like, at a certain point, you don't want that kind of negativity in your life. And it's like, if this is going to go on past a certain point, okay, but that's on you now. So
yeah, right. It's been 12 years. Put down the CrossFit, like calm down.
Yeah, exactly. I've had those, as you can imagine, in my career. Family reunions are very awkward for me.
Sure. I mean, it's amazing to me, and you can relate to this. You guys can relate to this too. I just interviewed Margaret Cho yesterday.
Oh, we love her.
This came up in our conversation because she's someone that obviously deals very, very closely with the way her life is. Like, all her comedy is about her family, and it's about her experience as a queer woman. And I had to ask her, I'm like, how did, you know, is family dinner awkward when you're telling jokes about your mom and your douche and whatever else, and then your mother is sitting next to you? And she was like, oh, no. And I'm like, well, that's a great mother if she just thinks it's awesome that she's the topic of your stand-up. I don't know how mine would take it.
But I think it's I think with Margaret and Kathy who just lost her mother, but they made their mom celebrities, which they, you know, and my mother was always reluctantly proud of me because she was Latrell in Sordid Lives and Lurline and Daddy Stein, Who's Got the Will. So she would admit to that. She would admit that this part's not like me.
And also, but your Aunt Sissy loved it.
Oh my God. My Aunt Sissy and I carted her everywhere. I flew her to Hollywood in her polyester pantsuit, and she sat in my director's chair on Ned and Stacy, and she lectured some of the cast members. She told Thomas Hayden Church that he needed to treat Stacy better, that he wasn't very nice to her.
That's awesome. Well, and have you had this one too, where people are asking to be a character? You should base a character on me.
Oh,
my life. And it's sort of like, okay, you know.
A lot of fans want me to write about their tragic lives. And I always say, I write comedy. I can't. Someone cornered Ann Walker and me at a meet and greet it was in Winston-Salem. And he told this tragic story about an abusive dad and the brother committing suicide, and Anne's a little drunk at this point, and she said, honey, I think at this point we need a little comedy. And I pretended to get a phone call and walked away.
Probably smart.
David, for your third book, you took a significant turn into historical fiction. Yes.
Well, so Sergius and Bacchus actually came out between the two Comic-Con books.
It's
kind of like a palate cleanser. It's like after writing one, it's sort of the last thing you want to do is go write another one with the same characters and the same format and everything. So Sergius and Bacchus was actually book number two in my bibliography, and it was a major departure. It's a true story of two Roman soldiers who were gay and in love and who converted to Christianity so they could get married in the 4th century. Wow. And like I say, true story, and I have all the documentation for it. So it's the story of their lives and how early Christians viewed sex and sexuality and relationships, how these things were viewed in the Roman world at a time when the last pagan emperor was on the throne. It's a very interesting sort of blend of contrasts. So
I love that. Now I think I want to start with that.
That's what I wanted to.
That sounds like a good movie to me.
I mean, I would love it. I would absolutely love it.
And that one needs a budget.
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny?
I've
never said this in an interview before, but I'll tell you guys, one of the movies I watched over and over when I was writing it is a film called Chimes at Midnight that was directed by Orson Welles that he made for just a couple $1,000s. It was not a big budget. And that was sort of the idea I had for the world these guys inhabited. It wasn't lots of big set pieces and everything. It was more like they're in a broken down old barn because that's what they had to deal with, you know? So my hope is that if it's made, it could be done modestly.
Oh, good. Well, and I figured given the amount of time Dal and I have spent in the world of religion and sexuality that our friends and fans and followers would certainly enjoy. So I feel like all of them are available on Kindle. I know. Are they all also still available in physical form?
Yes, you can get them in physical form and paperback. You can get them in audiobook if you want to listen to me talk for 26 hours or however long they actually run. They're all out there for people to read and enjoy.
So I want to ask you a couple of questions. When you write, or especially when you were novelizing, I know now that you're short on staff, and so you're just writing stories a lot. But what was your discipline? How did you? Because I get that question all the time. When did you write?
I wrote all day. So the way this worked was for a good 10 years, I didn't have a full-time job. I worked as an office temp for the major studios here in town, Universal and Disney. And sometimes had full-time hours, but I never had benefits or anything like that. The days that I had off during the week, I would write all day. I would always give myself the weekends off. And it just sort of went on like that.
Wow, that's a lot of discipline. I can only handle about 3 hours a day. Okay, we have something in common. When I wrote my first plate sheet, and I wrote it at ABC temping for Nick Nicoletti, because there was nothing to do except answer his phone and pour him a cup of coffee in the morning. And so I wrote my first play there, and I wrote my second play while I was temping at CBS. So writing scripts for The Facts of Life. That's how far that's.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I was a good typist. So those temp jobs paid my bills while I pursued my writing.
It's a meager living. People wonder why I'm this thin. There's a reason.
Who are you telling?
You subsist on yogurt and rage.
Like, all right, I want to flip for a little bit. And I want to tell you that I often go down a rabbit hole on Beardy's comments.
Oh, God.
One of the most vicious fights with, and people are just with some of these stories. Do you read them? I want to know, do you read them? Every now and then, by the way, I comment, and there's always an approval.
So I think I have to plead the fifth on this one, because the first rule of writing anything for the internet is don't read the comments.
Correct.
Because it's just either go to your head or it's going to be this awful, you know, flood of just negativity. Of course, we do police them, and for spammers or for people who are just being incendiary and whatnot. I haven't talked about this a lot with my colleagues, but I personally love that we have this following that's so energized by everything we're doing. And you start to recognize the names, you know, over time, some of the people who are regular commenters. And it's just really, really flattering to know that they're reading. So,
well, and also, you are right. Like, because Queer is one of the longest running in my own personal news sources on, particularly for queer stuff, that there have been some aggressive adventures over the years, but it does speak to, if when you put something out, you do want people to respond to it and engage with it and engage with each other. And that there has been such a spirited community for so long does speak to how relevant Queerty has managed to be in our news, as we've seen so many organizations pop, explode big for 18 months and then, you know, dissolve. Sustaining that as we continue to permeate the wider culture, you all have done really well with, in a way that many others have not been able to do.
And you also have some great history that we love to go and look at.
Well, that helps too. Thank you. We work really hard, and it's a testament to the people who have been there longer than I have. And Scott Gatz, our CEO, Chris Bull, our editor-in-chief, Dan Tracer, our managing editor, that we've kept up with all the major queer sites and publications in the world, and that we have this fan base, and we just get to keep going. So
I wasn't talking so much about the criticism of your writing or your writer's writing. It's often the stories that people really go after. You know, an Aaron Schrock story, it comes to mind, you know, where they're just so nuts. And then someone defends them, it's interesting. I get a little stoned, and it's like going to YouTube and watching gospel music.
Sure, certainly. I mean, Aaron Schock, we could talk a lot about Aaron Schock, because we don't really get to put our own personal opinions into these stories most of the time. So,
right.
I have thoughts.
So do we.
Yeah. We have let her have it.
No, that's wonderful.
Well, because, you know, our thing, he tends to be the hothead. I tend to be the reasonable one. I don't know why you made that face like it isn't the truth. And that's like what we, but there are a few people and subjects that make me explode. And that's one of them as well.
But your explosions, you're right, Emerson. You aren't you aren't as hot headed as I am. I mean, I go right to fuck you. And Emerson's like, well, let's process this first.
I tend to be more the passionate, hot-headed, snarling one when things trip my trigger, which is fairly easy and frequent.
I think isolation really contributes to that, where you just go, fuck it, I have no patience for this.
Well, I can tell you that the past few weeks have been rough. especially, you know, since we've been going into June with all the turmoil going on, you know, this is Pride Month, and there are a million other things I'd rather be doing than sitting at home, frankly, as I'm sure everybody else feels. But, you know, the beautiful thing about being a writer, as you guys well know, is that it's all about connecting with people that you don't ever meet sometimes. It's about sharing this thing. This made me feel better here. This made me think something here, you know, and you just put it out there. And so in a time like this where people are stuck at home and they need to feel connected to the rest of the world, that's the, you know, that's when the job is probably at its, I don't know, most flattering, I guess. It's a pleasure.
Well, and it's important that we have people like you that are passionate in the positions of directing our focus, because that's literally what you do. You know, you decide, where are we looking today? And, you know, that we have people like you that are passionate and can then articulate it and guide us in serious moments and then in when we need to escape. You know, the full range of that is in the work that you do, and that's really important.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. And then that's, you know, one of my favorite parts of it is, especially when it comes to entertainment, something I'm obviously very, very passionate about, as you guys are, seeing a new film that doesn't have distribution yet and getting some notice for the filmmakers and the performers, and then hopefully helping it find a distributor. We've been able to do that in the past. In fact, I think everything I saw at Sundance this year that didn't have, I take that back. There's one that I guess still doesn't have a distributor, but everything I saw at Sundance and published on has been picked up. And will be coming out this year, so that's exciting.
Well, and thank you on behalf of independent filmmakers. I mean, we need people to be our cheerleaders. I if it weren't for film festivals, I always say, if it weren't for film festivals and the gay press, I would have no career. I mean, it all started.
Neither would I. Good Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a beautiful thing, and. Despite everything that's going on, I've seen some wonderful films this year. So,
well, and of course, as we all know, the times of greatest tribulation often create the most compelling pieces of art. So, art is advocacy in so many ways, from so many great examples. So, it's all relevant, and it all contributes to our small queer conversations, our large queer people of color and Black people conversations. You know, they're all intertwined, and all of us doing our part where we are contributes to the movement.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And occasionally I even get to do, you know, an investigative piece or something that actually is a big, you know, original story unto itself, not just a celebrity interview or covering a film. So those are really thrilling to do also.
Well, what do you do when you want to have, like, what's your off things? What do you enjoy? What entertains you when you're not, you know?
I have so little off time, quite frankly. I'm a huge nerd. I'm a huge Star Wars fan. And so I end up watching other movies or shows that I just watch for fun that we aren't necessarily... Oh, it's Baby Yoda! The child.
This is the second child at my house.
The second one? You have another one?
Yeah, we already got the Mattel one that's the better one. This new tiny one just arrived the other day, and... my boyfriend took the voice box out of this one and put it into the Mattel one that's better.
No, I love that. That's awesome. No, I've been wanting, I need a boyfriend so I can go get the Build-A-Bear one when that finally comes out, because I'm all about the Baby Yoda. I should have like pulled out some of my stuff to show you guys, my Porg and my lightsaber collection and all of that. So
you would really get along with Blake, with Emerson's boyfriend. He is obsessed. Yeah.
He's one. I relate to your journey.
Oh, well, thank you. No, it's a deep rabbit hole to fall down, and I think I'm still tumbling, so it's been a while.
Yes.
But I like to, you know, when there's not a global pandemic going on, I love traveling. I'm always spending time with my friends, hosting roundtable night where we all just get together and chat, or going out to some party, doing something, flirting. Flirting's fun. Yes. On the occasion I get to do that.
It's a great hobby.
What was that?
Yes, that's a great hobby. That's one I fully support. Yes.
It is a great hobby. I don't know if I'm great at it, but I try. I'm just a regular guy. I make a lot of my own clothes. I'm a tailor. I make visual art.
That's amazing.
That, like, just came out of nowhere.
I make my own clothes.
I have it here. I made my notebook that to all my interviews and whatnot. You can see questions and notes and things in there. Yeah. But and that's a conversation starter when you sit down with somebody.
That's astonishing.
Yeah. It's also very lightweight, so it saves my back.
Yes. Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Well, we have thoroughly enjoyed talking to you, David. You are an inspiration to so many, and we love what you do and keeping us entertained. And thanks for including us in some of that every now and then. We appreciate it. And I love your mind. I think you have an amazing mind. So I'm gonna go to Amazon right after we end this, and I'm gonna order me The Passion of Sergius and Bacchus.
Oh gosh, yes. You guys order me. Thank you. No, it's always my delight to talk to fun guys like yourself. So.
Well, and we really do mean it. What you do is important, and the way you personally and specifically do it is really impressive and unique. And so it's fun for us to turn the table around and let you be the focus for a while.
Well, thank you. I think it's an old axiom of journalism, never become the story yourself. But I think the guys who usually, you know, become the story make better money. So I'm sort of okay with wading into it every now and again.
Absolutely.
I have to pay for groceries somehow, so.
Correct. Well, David, thank you so much for joining us. You can find all of his books. They're available on Amazon in multiple formats. So get them, check them out, enjoy them. Let him know what you think about them. You can find him on the socials and always in his byline at queerdy.com.
Yeah, queerdy.com. We will be there every week. So every day.
You have immaculate taste.
I follow you on Twitter. So awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. I so appreciate that you said yes. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Anytime.
All right. Bye, David. He really is fantastic. And
I told you he was going to be a great guest.
Well, and also because we've been doing the show for so many years, basically we get our stories from other people. And so I know the bylines of a lot of the people that work at Queer Media and have seen some of them move from outlet to outlet and have watched as various platforms have risen and fallen, and, you know, from HuffPost Gay Voices to the Queer Voices and the Advocate. And you really can tell the difference in who is writing the stories. So, and I had no idea that he was an author till he said it. So I also love seeing people in our community that have a wide variety of talents. And I think being an artist himself informs the way he writes about other artists. And so I think that sort of explains it too.
Yeah. He's very charming. There's something very, very personable and charming about him too. I really, when I interviewed with him, because you know, with interviews, I used to keep, okay, I'm going to confess something. I used to just keep a string of questions on my desktop that were asked of me regularly, and I would just especially when people would do an email interview with me, I would just kind of pull it and tweak it just a little bit because it was the same thing. What was it like working with Rue McClanahan? What's Caroline Ray like? You know, those kind of questions. Not like that at all with him. He's really intelligent, and I was going to say intelligent and smart, but that's redundant.
I mean, you know.
Anything else? What do we have now?
No, we don't.
Well, that's all. That's all.
We did it all. Y'all, you know, we do. We're going to continue to keep the theme of this month, pride and protest, and enjoy all of that. So if you have thoughts, questions, comments, you're always welcome to share them with us. We'll be back on Friday with a new round of adventures. Make sure that you're doing what you can, where you can, to be a part of the conversations that are happening. Risk it. Be a little brave. You know, say something uncomfortable. Stand up. If you can donate, donate. If you're donating to all the causes and you still have money left over and you want to donate to us, you can. Please do. I'll spend it on groceries and things. You can send us a tip on Venmo at Emerson Collins or to PayPal at beardcollinshoresproductions@gmail.com. No obligation. We're glad you're here. I'm grateful.
So thank you so much for joining us today on this Tuesday, warm day here in LA.
Be gentle to yourselves, take care of yourselves,
stay safe,
mental health, and be safe. And we'll see you on Friday.
All right. Bye, y'all.